Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
This case regards a 36-year-old Gravita 3 Para 2 who presented to the emergency department on a Saturday. She had had spotting Thursday and Friday. There was no LMP noted in the notes. Her examination was normal. From the standpoint that her vital signs were stable, she had a little point tenderness in the right lower quadrant and in the suprapubic region. She had no vaginal bleeding, no cervical motion tenderness, and no adnexal fullness. They obtained an HCG that was 209, and her hemoglobin and hematocrit were stabilized at 12.7 and 35.9. Now, an ultrasound was obtained in the hospital, which revealed what appeared to be the uterus in an antiverted position and what appeared to be an adnexal cyst. And in fact, their report indicated that the uterus was normal, that there was mild thickening of the endometrium, but no definite intrauterine gestational sac was seen. They said this could be consistent with an early intrauterine gestation, an ectopic pregnancy or abortion, and they recommended correlation with the quantitative HCG levels as well as clinical follow-up and a follow-up ultrasound as needed. She presented several days later with complaints of right lower quadrant, now ranking it as 8 out of 10 with no vaginal bleeding. Her exam was read as, and this is quoted, an abdomen mild tender, no tenderness in right inguinal area, no abdominal tenderness, no guardian or rebound, no pelvic was performed in the emergency department. They got a repeat HCG that is now 2399, and her hematocrit and hemoglobin were stable. Well, note the ultrasound was performed, and this time they even wrote on it questionable sac, and this is the area that they were looking at as a possible sac. They measured it at about 5 millimeters and said it was out of range for the mean age, and they again noted this adnexal mass in the right adnexa. Now, they said, compared to the previous ultrasound report, there's been development of a small fluid collection in the cavity, which may represent an early gestational sac. It was estimated to be 5 millimeters, which was too early to determine the fetal age, and they recommended follow-up ultrasounds. And they said there is a 1.2 centimeter right ovarian cyst. Now, the patient is seen in the physician's follow-up several days later, and notes that she was seen in the ED, she's had no bleeding, menstrual-like cramping. The note actually said, quote unquote, seen in ER for pain, last HCG 2399, right ovarian cyst was seen, no FF or free fluid. Vital signs were stable. An ultrasound obtained in this doctor's office, and these are really the entire images that we see, included an image of the uterus and an image of this area in the right adnexa. Now, I'd like to point out this area, which I think we have seen on the previous ultrasounds, but this was interpreted somewhat differently by the physician. It says there's no IUP. There is a double ring-like structure seen on the ultrasound today. It says that they think there's an ectopic pregnancy, and they recommended a serum HCG, quantitative HCG, follow-up in 4 days with methotrexate to be given. Now, I want to point out something on this. In this ultrasound, there is a small sac-like structure inside the uterus with a slight hyperechoic ring that likely would represent an early IUP. She's seen in the physician's office about a week later, and they get a second ultrasound. And this ultrasound, as we see, is difficult to interpret. It shows this in the right adnexa, which is labeled right ovary. They also noticed this area in the right adnexa, which they described as a right ovarian cystic mass that happens to lie on a linear structure. And in my interpretation of this, this likely represents the internal iliac, both artery and vein. The physician's notes document the following. Vaginal ultrasound, empty uterus, no free fluid, 3 centimeter right cyst, but ovaries bilaterally normal. States that they plan on getting an HCG, expected to be about 650, and says that this is an ectopic pregnancy. Well, she comes back for her reevaluation 3 days later. Her hemoglobin hematocrit is 12.8, 35.9. HCG is now 10,409. It's noted she has a normal creatinine and LFTs. Now, she's seen in the ED at this time, and they perform an ultrasound which reveals this, an early intrauterine pregnancy. Now, one thing I want to comment on is one will note that this is done with an abdominal ultrasound. This is not a vaginal ultrasound. And one must imply then that the pregnancy had been pulled out of the pelvis and was not visible on a vaginal ultrasound and required an abdominal ultrasound. But there's clearly an early gestational sac, a yolk sac, and an early embryo with a crown rump length of about 3 millimeters. Now, they're now remeasured the right ovary, which looks different. This then says what we were looking at was a corpus luteum, likely in resolution. And again, this is on the abdominal ultrasound. And the notes now state that she has an early pregnancy with a threatened abortion. And it says, per Dr. So-and-so, please begin your prenatal vitamins as soon as possible, follow up with Dr. So-and-so, and to have routine OB care and genetic counseling due to methotrexate given. Now, if we look at her HCG summary, this is important to kind of put the story together. On May 30th, her HCG was 209. 5 days later, it's 2399. It's gone up the anticipated rise that we would see with a normal pregnancy. This is at a point in time shortly after this that she was seen in the doctor's office, and they gave methotrexate. Now, they gave the methotrexate before they got this HCG level back. And I would suggest that if you had waited for the HCG level to come back, you would have reconsidered your diagnosis and perhaps repeated an ultrasound to reevaluate the situation, particularly since the patient was clinically stable. Her HCG then 6 days later was 13,232. And then we see it drop to about 10,409. Now, she's seen in the doctor's office again on the 19th of June, and they get this ultrasound, which somehow they've been able to determine that the crown rump length is 4.7 millimeters. I think you can see a dramatic difference in the quality of this ultrasound and the one obtained at the hospital. And what they assessed this was, is that it was a fetal demise, status post methotrexate with the beta HCG dropping, and the ultrasound confirmed a fetal demise, and she wants definitive surgical treatment. Well, this raises several issues, and I bring them up. One is the use of contemporary equipment with proper maintenance. We see here three ultrasound images done in the doctor's office, all which I believe are substandard, which we'll discuss more. But these should have been replaced by contemporary equipment. What we see is the lifespan for our equipment is probably 5 to 8 years. If we remember that these are computers, they're imaging machines, but the base of them are computers. And if you think it's your home computer, do you keep a computer for 15 years? You recognize that the computer is significantly better that was just brought out or even brought out 2 years ago. So that's important. The other thing that we see here is thermal prints were used for capture in this situation. And this is what was retained. And we see that these degrade over time. Now, I have several recommendations. One is that you preferably capture them in a digital retention environment. That can either be done by a PAC system or with cloud retention, which is available now. Or alternatively, if you take your machine and once a month, take a DVD and copy off the images for 1 month, label the DVD as that month and put them on a shelf, they will be retained much better. And I recommend retaining those for the statute of limitations for your state or jurisdiction. We saw several errors that also were in this, and that is, one, the perception error. That means that they didn't identify the gestational sac on their ultrasound in the office. Two is that they saw something, but they called it incorrectly. They incorrectly called a normal ovary with a corpus luteum an ectopic pregnancy, and they incorrectly called the internal iliac vessel a cystic ovarian mass. So with that as a baseline, what I'd like to do is to now have us discuss this allow for more questions.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the quality of the equipment that was used in this case.
Yes.
Let's say that, you know, they did have the upgraded equipment. The interpretation still could have been off or missed. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think had they had more contemporary equipment, I think their imaging quality would have revealed an early intrauterine pregnancy. So I do believe that it would have enhanced their diagnostic capabilities. Now, you've brought up a point, though, that there are people who are relatively inexperienced, and I'm not saying that this wasn't this case, but maybe relatively inexperienced in interpreting ultrasounds. One thing we find commonly, particularly in an office environment, is that sonographers are relied upon to make the diagnosis for the physician. And I'm going to speak to that because that is absolutely not to be allowed. Sonographers do not make a diagnosis. The physician has to make the diagnosis. The sonographer's job is to obtain the images, such a quality of such that the physician can make the appropriate diagnosis. And we see that as a root of now increasing litigation against sonographers and physicians in that they rely on the sonographers for their diagnosis. It's good to have a trained sonographer do your imaging if you're not comfortable personally, and then you'll maximize your image quality and your ability to make an appropriate diagnosis.
Absolutely. So why would a doctor rely on a sonographer specifically to make the diagnosis, even though, you know, that's advised against?
Well, I think it goes into our basic training. I would say that most residency programs are deficient in training physicians in a formal fashion for GYN ultrasound. They do better with OB ultrasound, but GYN ultrasound is oftentimes an afterthought. It also was brought out later in our careers. I started to do ultrasound in 1978, started to do a vaginal ultrasound in 1986. And before that, I relied on the radiologist for telling me the diagnoses. Well, I've had enough experience that I feel comfortable, but many physicians have not had that, I would say, luxury almost, or ability to really do their own ultrasounds. And thus, technically, they feel uncomfortable doing the ultrasound themselves and must rely on a sonographer to do their adequate studies. If a sonographer is not available, they may try to do the ultrasound, but I think what we see is sometimes those images are just not of the quality that we would expect.
Right, there's a major difference, and it's notable.
Well, one of my personal goals in life is to enhance the training of physicians in doing GYN ultrasound and interpreting GYN ultrasound and bringing us up to a different level. And that's why I've remained in education. And one of my goals now is we've developed now GYN ultrasound training programs, both for our local university as well as now other universities in the country.
So office documentation didn't meet the current guidelines for evaluation and management. What do you have to say about that and how they didn't really discuss the assessment?
Well, you see it was pretty limited assessment in their documentation. And if you look at documentation guidelines, I think the most readily available guidelines are those produced by AIUM, the American Institute of Ultrasound and Medicine. And there are clinical practice guidelines, both for how to perform a pelvic ultrasound and how to document your findings. And I think it helps physicians that's available online without a membership to AIUM. It's AIUM.org. And by way of disclosure, I am now the chair of the clinical practice committee at AIUM. But I think it gives a guideline for how to do your interpretations. And it's important to include in your imaging the uterus and the adnexa in a systematic fashion and to retain images for all of those different parameters. Two is when you do your documentation, you want to make sure that those are documented. Now that can be done either by a program that's been developed for ultrasound reporting. It can be done by your electronic health record, particularly by producing smart phrases so that you include all the appropriate information. Or three, it can be in a handwritten note, but you have to make sure that all the different parameters are there and the interpretation is of a quality interpretation. Usually with the diagnosis, an appropriate differential diagnosis, and recommendations for further testing if appropriate. Well, I think the base for most litigation that I see regarding methotrexate in treatment of presumed ectopic pregnancies is that physicians tend to be anxious to treat the patient before the diagnosis is affirmed. And what our recommendations are is several things. Number one is, if a patient is clinically stable and their HCG is of such a level where you're not above a discriminatory zone, which I'm going to talk about a little bit more, it is appropriate to observe that patient and to perform serial HCG levels with ultrasounds in order to establish more reliably the diagnosis. Now, the discriminatory level has changed. Earlier on, we thought it was somewhere on the range of around, say, 1,500 to 2,000 or 2,500. We now know with new articles that that level is actually higher, perhaps as high as 2,500 to 3,500. And so if one wants to avoid treating an intrauterine pregnancy unexpectedly, one should rely on a higher level. The other thing to keep in mind too is multiple pregnancies will have higher level of HCG levels and ultrasound findings that don't correlate. So you have to be cautious with that. Two is that don't treat a patient unless you know the diagnosis is secure. We now have a concept called a pregnancy of unknown location where you can't see a gestational sac or a yolk sac, which is the definitive diagnosis of a pregnancy. And when you can't see that and you don't see anything else, you have to say it's a pregnancy of unknown location. Kind of a take-home message is if you see any cystic area within the uterus and no adnexal masses, that's associated with an intrauterine pregnancy in almost 99% of the cases.
Okay.
So
wow.
It is a very reliable thing to look at. And I think we need to kind of discard some of the discussion in the past that we talked about double ring structures and things like that and really talk about gestational sacs, yolk sacs, or the presence of an embryo.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Pap Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.